This is Brewers on Tap.
Welcome into episode number 24 of Brewers on Tap, the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. Hi again, everybody. Jeff Levering with you down in Chicago for this week's edition of the podcast. Throughout the episode, we'll hear from Brewers alum and former first-round pick Don August, as well as Fox Sports Wisconsin stat man Mike Faulkner. But we start this week's podcast with the news of general manager Doug Melvin stepping aside after nearly 13 years as the Brewers GM. The news came down on Tuesday afternoon that Doug Melvin would not continue on as the Brewers general manager, and the search for a new GM has already begun with principal owner Mark Attanasio. According to the Brewers owner, he said that he would begin asking for permission to interview candidates this week while at the owners' meetings here in Chicago. For Doug Melvin, he said, quote, "I'm 63 years old and I've been doing this for 20 years. My gut feeling tells me it's time to give Mark the opportunity to look for the new generation of general managers." Originally hired back in 2002, Doug Melvin pulled off some spectacular trades as well as drafting significant cornerstones like Prince Fielder, Ricky Weeks, Giovanni Gallardo, and Ryan Braun in successive seasons. Of course, Doug Melvin's tenure will be remembered for the CC Sabathia deal back in 2008, as well as the Zach Greinke deal in 2011. As for Doug Melvin in the near future, he has taken an advisory role with the Brewers and will be part of the process in searching for a new general manager. So that's the news on Doug Melvin, and now we take a look back in this week in Brewers history.
And now this week, the Brewers history.
We take you back to August 18th, 1968, and that's before the Brewers were even a club. So on August the 18th, the Seattle Pilots unveiled their team logo. The design featured gold wings flanking a red ship's wheel, which surrounded a white baseball all trimmed in blue. The name Pilots appeared on the sweet spot in italicized lowercase letters. Now, the Pilots would end up becoming the Brewers in 1970, but those old Pilots uniforms lived on. According to Brewers Hall of Famer Robin Yount, his 1973 Newark Co-Pilots wore those old uniforms, and someone actually took a felt tip marker and wrote Co on the jerseys next to the word Pilots. Not sure if that actually happened with the felt tip markers, but it's a good story from Robin Yount. And back on August 19, 1995, Governor Tommy Thompson, Milwaukee County Executive Tom Ammons, Milwaukee Mayor John Norquist, and Brewers President Bud Selig unveiled a $250 million financing plan for a new Brewers stadium. That ballpark would become Miller Park. It was a good week for the crew, both individually on the pitching slab and at the plate. So let's go back to listen to last week's highlights.
Jeanette takes off. Lucroy turns this one around. Back is up and he leaps out and he's gone. A home run for Lucroy. Two-run home run. Bernie hits the slide early tonight.
And the 1-1 pitch, a swing and a smash, fair down the right field line, into the corner, going to score two. Shane Peterson may have a three-bagger, turning second, he will easily stand at third. And the Brewers add a couple of more. Two outs and two on here in the eighth inning. Good afternoon for Chris. He hit his eighth home run of the year with two on back in the third. Ready for the 1-1 delivery. Here it is. And this one is hit to center and deep. Way back. Get up. Get out of here. Gone for Chris Davis. He just hit another three-run shot out of here. And the Brewers now lead 10-1. Wow. Chris Davis with a huge afternoon. Six runs batted in, swinging a bouncer to a diving stab. Segura gets up and throws him out. Whoa, what a play again by Gene Segura. A diving stab to his left. Got up, spun around, and threw out Upton. and this one is over. You can't play any better than that.
So coming off the DL, he's been good. Here's the 1-1. Swinging a ground ball. Chopped to third. Perez with a leap. And fields it, throws it on to first, inning over. Matt Garza has sent down 7 in a row. He has pitched brilliantly this afternoon.
Swing and a miss. Youngman with the curveball. Now Lucroy wants it up. And a curveball swung on, missed. That was a deke by Lucroy. A strikeout to end the inning. A career-high 8 punch-outs for Taylor Youngman.
Meanwhile, the count is 2-2. It's only the second runner that Cruz has thrown out this season. Herrera gets in the one deep right field. Hayward going back. Gone! Shutout streak gone. Brewers on the board. Davis with a drive left center field, and it is gone. Make it 3-0 Milwaukee. Two-run blast, Chris Davis, as the Brewers play long ball here in the third.
Broxton running, and delivers, and Davis sends it in the air to right, way back. Get up! Get out of here! Gone! For Davis! He just hit one out of here on the first pitch from Jonathan Broxton. And the Brewers have the lead. How about that one?
Taylor Youngman tossed 7 strong frames against the Padres at Miller Park, including striking out a career-high 8. Shane Peterson notched his team lead tying third triple and became the first Brewers batter to triple in back-to-back games since Niger Morgan did it back in 2012. Jonathan Lucroy hit his 4th home run of the season. Matt Garza has been great since coming off the disabled list, going 2-2 in 4 starts with a 2.55 earned run average. And Chris Davis blasted a pair of 3-run homers and drove in a career-high 6 in a 10-1 win and a series victory over the Padres. And Davis would blast 2 more homers and drove in 4 against the St. Louis Cardinals on Sunday. So the Brewers have the Cubs in Chicago, then come back against the Phillies and the Miami Marlins. But before we get into what's coming up for the Brewers, let's catch up with the crew and chat with Brewers alum Don August.
Let's catch up with the crew.
Joining us now on Brewers on Tap, it is Brewers alumni and former Brewers pitcher Don August. And Don, now you grew up in Southern California, came out here to Milwaukee. You stayed in Milwaukee. What was it about this area that made you want to stay? I mean, it's a lot warmer in Southern California, but there's something about Milwaukee that makes you want to stay.
It's the people. It's just kind of this town, Milwaukee. It kind of is a unique situation compared to the rest of the cities in the league. It's a smaller but big town. It's more homey, more hometown style of the people that support us here. And my wife was from here, and you know, ever since I've been here at the Brewers in 1988, I've been here ever since.
What did it mean to you to play for the Brewers? Now, you weren't drafted by Milwaukee. You were drafted in the first round by Houston, traded for, I believe it was Danny Darwin. He was part of that deal. When you got here to Milwaukee, you got an opportunity to pitch in the big leagues for the first time. What did that mean for you to do it here in Milwaukee?
It was great. And when I was traded to the Brewers, I was still in the minor league, so my goal was to make it to the major leagues in Milwaukee. I'd never been here before. And when I got here, I got my opportunity. I got my chance. I had some success early on. And it was great. The first year that I was here, we were battling to make the playoffs. I think we were the last team to be eliminated on the second to the last day of the season. It was a dream come true. You know, as a little kid, you hope to make the major leagues. And when you do make it, I mean, it's everything you hope for and even better. Everything's the best.
Don August is chatting with us right now. And we just met today, but we have something in common. We went to the same college. We went to Chapman College when you were there, Chapman University when I was there. We're both former Panthers. Obviously, that's cool for us. Not a lot of big league guys coming out of Chapman. Tim Flannery is one. You're another. There are only a couple of them. What did that mean to you to come out of a school and only have a handful of people do that?
Well, there have just only been a few. Chapman, just a little small little school there in Orange, California, right in the heart of Orange County. You know, I just wanted to have a chance to play somewhere. You know, I was getting some attention from some Division I schools there in Southern California. They all kind of fell apart. Chapman College at the time was there. They promised me an opportunity to pitch. I saw their schedule back then in the day. We were a Division II team, but we played against all the big-time schools in the area. We went to Arizona State. We played USC, UCLA, all the big teams. And when I saw that schedule, I go, that's fine for me. And Chapman is such a nice little small school that you knew everybody. And I really enjoyed it there a lot. I would do it all over again.
Well, you also had an opportunity to pitch in the Olympics, 1984, and that had a pretty star-studded group of people that were on it, Mark McGuire, Barry Larkin, and USC's coach Rod Dado. What was that experience like for you pitching for the Olympic team?
That was great. That was awesome. I mean, I was 1984. I had a great year. I got a lot of attention. I was asked to go and join the tryout team. There's like 31 of us players that we met in Louisville. We went on this grueling tour. It was like 30-something cities, 30-something games, and 30-something days. I mean, it was some hardcore traveling. But it was great experience, though. All the players that were doing that, you know, it was kind of preparing us if we were to make the big leagues, kind of like what life was like. And it was a great experience. You know, then we went to the Olympic Games in L.A., which is right down the street from Chapman, and having my family there and pitching in Dodger Stadium and pitching in front of those kinds of crowds, I mean, I'll never forget it.
And it was crazy because I'm doing some reading and research on this. It wasn't an official Olympic sport at the time. You guys finished second. It was the only game you lost was that quote-unquote gold medal game.
Yeah.
So you would have won silver medals, but you guys didn't get medals, did you?
Well, I got a medal.
Oh, good. You got medals.
We
okay.
Got medals. It was considered a demonstration sport. They were introducing baseball into the Olympics. It was a number of years that Rod Dado, being one of the guys that was trying to really push for many years of getting it in, they got it in. We played the whole tournament. We all got medals. We stayed in the Olympic Village. We had the whole everything. It was awesome. And then the 88 Olympics, it then became an official sport where it counted on the record and all that stuff. But I have me a silver medal at home, though, so I've treasured that thing for 30 years now.
Yeah. Who are some of the guys that you kind of latched onto on that team? Obviously big names, like we talked about, McGuire, Larkin, a couple other guys. Who are some of the guys that you really hung out with on that team when you were traveling, close quarters?
Well, what we did is we traveled around and we had roommates, you know, we were staying in hotels across the country, and they kind of switched us off around. So you got to know a lot of the guys. Bobby Witt was one of my roommates, another pitcher. They usually kept pitchers with pitchers. Mike Dunn played a little bit with the Seattle Mariners and I believe the Cardinals and Pirates. Scott Bankhead, Billy Swift from the University of Maine. You know, I'm throwing all these names out because I think on our team, we ended up with a 20-man squad. 17 of the guys ended up playing in the major leagues. So over the years when we were playing, you know, we always said hi to each other, you know, because we did share something that was very different and special. You know, and it's great now that a guy like Barry Larkin is in the Hall of Fame. You know, Mark McGuire had a great career, and unfortunately, you know, the steroid issue kind of was around that. But before he even did that kind of stuff, he was a great player. And several of the other guys, you know, B.J. Surhoff ended up being a teammate of mine here with the Brewers. So it was something that, you know, we all knew at the time was something great, being in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And then our professional baseball careers came on after that. 17 of us made it to the major leagues. And then, you know, when we run into each other, we all look at each other and just, we always had that instant kind of, you know, you can tell by the look, that thought, it was like, ah, 84, sure, that Olympic year.
It's something that obviously you'll relish for the rest of your life, and you'll always have it. Chatting with Don August, Brewers alumni. Again, you've stayed here in Milwaukee. What are you doing these days?
I've been teaching. I got a teaching license. I've been doing that for the last 10 years. I've been substituting the last 2 years in Germantown in the Sussex districts. I've been coaching some high school baseball at Menominee Falls, and that keeps me pretty busy right there. You know, my wife and my son take a lot of my time too.
Do any of the kids you teach know that you used to pitch for the Brewers?
They all figure it out. You know, when I'm substitute teaching like I did yesterday, the kids all, hey, are you an ex-MLB player? And I go, yeah. And they and it's, you know, it's been 20-something years, is before they were born, but, you know, they all find it very special that I'm there. Like, what are you doing here? I go, hey, this is what I do. So yeah. I enjoy it.
What are parent-teacher conferences like? I mean, I can imagine if you got some Brewer fans that come to a parent-teacher conference or something, hey, you're Don August. You pitch for the Brewers.
You know, everyone, they kind of do that at first, but then it just seems like that's what I've done. And, you know, now I'm there as a teacher, and I, you know, we talk about their kids and what's important to them. You know, and the conversations go, what's important. But then it is fun that we can have a little chat on the side. You know, what was it like to play in Old County Stadium? And everyone always likes to know more about what Robin Yount was like and Paul Motter and Jim Gantner and all those kind of guys. So, you know, it's helpful for me to connect with kids. You know, they look at me like I'm this great person because I played baseball. But, you know, if that's the connection and I can get through to the kids because I enjoy being with them. You know, I think that's the best part of all, is just being able to connect a kid, help guide them, and, you know, it's something I like to continue to do.
Well, Don, it's great to see you. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes with us, and we will be cheering on the Chapman Panthers, too.
That's right. I'm already watching their schedule on the websites, man. Go Panthers.
Our special thanks to Don August for joining us here on the podcast. And now this week, we talk with somebody who's been behind the scenes for a long time. That's Fox Sports statistician Mike Faulkner, who breaks it down.
Let's break it down.
We're back on the podcast, and we've got a very special guest for you. And a lot of people might recognize him from the television broadcast as the guy who sits next to Brian Anderson. But it is Mike Faulkner. He is the stats man for Fox Sports Wisconsin. And Mike, this is a subject that a lot of people might not really have a full grasp of. So you're the stats guy for BA and for Rock. You know, talk a little bit about what you do on a day-in and day-out basis.
Well, my job basically for Brian is I look for information that I think will be interesting during the game as it comes up. So a lot of the things are things that might happen. So I'll come here early and look up things that that might happen, and I make notes on those things so that just in case it does happen, then I slip the note to Brian as it happens so that he can just, you know, interject it on the broadcast. And as well as when the game is going on, as things happen, you know, I give him information as well.
It's a ongoing thing. You do a bunch of research before the ball games. You're reading notes. You're digging into media guides. Now, how much research you put in before a game?
Well, a lot of people think, oh, you must have a computer that you use all the time. But actually, I never use a computer. I only use the press notes that are available from both teams. I use the media guides, and I use, like, the post-game notes. So it's all things that I read and look at and things that I might find interesting. So I just go through all the team's notes, and I pick out bits and pieces that I think would be interesting to throw in during the broadcast.
Now, for me, when I'm doing a game, I keep track of first pitch strikes. That's one thing that I like to keep track of. Is there a certain thing that you, hey, man, I got to make sure I count how many first pitch strikes or whatever the stat is? Is there something that you really focus in on every day?
Well, things like that. The other half of my job, actually, besides working with Brian, is on my headset. I'm with the production people in the truck. So a lot of those kind of stats, back when I started, I used to keep track of pitch counts and first pitch strikes and ground ball, fly balls, those things. But that I don't anymore because now that's all done in the truck. So if you want it, you can just quickly get it. So I rely on those guys out there a lot, too, you know, for information. So my job more is the interesting things, you know, maybe Scooter Gennett hits two doubles. Okay, when's the last time somebody hit three doubles in a game? And I'll look that up ahead of time in case it happens. So it's always fun when it does happen.
Yeah, just got it ready. Mike Faulkner is our guest here. How'd you get into this?
Well, like a million years ago, a friend of mine worked on the Marquette stat crew, and they added a shot chart to their crew. And I was asked if I would be interested in doing that, and I was. But I was very happy to be able to do that back then. And then I worked, you know, you just keep meeting people. I worked with the Bucks for the visiting teams as they came up doing stats. And then about 20-some years ago, Jim Paschke asked me to be his statistician, and I started doing that with him. And then when Fox Sports took over with the Brewers, then I started, my first year was with the Brewers full-time was Darren Sutton's first year. So I've been with Darren his years, then now since Brian's been here. Then I've also done a lot of college basketball games over the years. I worked for Westwood One for many years with the NFL and things. So it's a great job for a sports fan and someone who likes numbers.
Sure. Now, how did you get into loving stats so much? Were you a math guy when you were coming through? How'd you get to love it?
Well, I've always liked numbers. I can remember being a kid and listening to games on the radio and keeping score and, you know, both basketball and baseball. So I've just always liked computing numbers. I used to, back in my regular job days, I was a FIA teacher. And so I've always been involved in sports and coaching. And but I also always tried to impress on the kids that, you know, math is important. And so I'd always make my classes figure out batting averages and earn run average and shooting percentage and those kind of things.
Now you not only do baseball, but you do basketball. Do you do some football as well?
I used to do football, but not anymore. I used to do I worked with Westwood One for the Monday night and Sunday night games. So I did many games in Green Bay and Chicago and Minneapolis.
Okay. Now, is there an off season for you?
My off season is the month of October. Because the Brewers go through September, and then the Bucks start in November. So October is really the only month that I'm not involved with statistician work.
It's pretty fun. Is there a nugget that's been your favorite that you've passed on to somebody? I'm sure there's been plenty, but is there one in particular that you can think of that's been really especially cool for you?
I can't think offhand of a specific one, but it's like I say, when odd things actually happen, those are the most fun things to be able to pass on.
Sure.
But off the top of my head, I can't think of one specific one.
What's it like sitting next to BA and Rock on a day in and day out basis?
Well, they're the great, great guys to work for. You know, it's I'm lucky to be able to come in here and have them to work with. Brian and Bill are both the best guys in the world to work with every night. It's a pleasure. It's fun. They're both very nice individuals, and I'll make you feel part of the family between Bill and Brian and Renee and I. We've been up here for a lot of years, and yeah, I look forward to every day coming to the ballpark and working with those guys. They're a delight.
Well, Rock and BA have their checks in the mail for you, so they appreciate that answer. And Renee, she's just the best. So keep up the good work, Mike, and find those great stats.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Jeff.
Checking in on the farm.
We go down on the farm this week to look at what's going on in the Brewers minor league system. And Trent Clark, this year's first round pick, has been on a tear. Recently had a 14-game hitting streak snapped. The first rounder is hitting .317 with a homer, 13 RBIs, an organizational leading 5 triples, and 12 stolen bases this season. Another draft pick from the 2015 class, Nathan Kirby from the University of Virginia, made his first professional start on Sunday with the Wisconsin Timberrattlers. He's been limited with his innings that he can throw this year because of the workload he had in college this season. So he went just 3 frames, allowing just a run with a couple of strikeouts. And a former top pick a couple of years ago, Devin Williams, followed Kirby with 3 scoreless innings with 5 strikeouts. Williams, one of the top prospects in the Brewers system, owns a 3.15 earned run average this season. And not enough can be said about shortstop Orlando Arcia in AA Biloxi. The number one prospect in the Brewers system, according to MLB.com, is batting .302 with a league-leading 31 doubles, 55 runs batted in, and 21 stolen bases over the course of 103 games. He's among the Southern League leaders in several categories, including average, which he's 7th. He leads the league, as mentioned, in doubles. He's 3rd in runs scored, 4th in extra base hits, and 3rd in total bases. In a recent acquisition, right-hander Adrian Hauser was very sharp against Mississippi a few days ago, tossing 5 1/3 innings of 1-run ball. He allowed 4 hits, did not walk a batter, and struck out 3. So far in 2 starts, Hauser has a 3.27 earned run average. He has struck out 9 in 11 innings and has yet to walk a man in the Southern League.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
Here's what's on tap for the Brewers as they come home from this series against the Cubs on Friday, and they start a 6-game homestand with the Phillies and the Marlins. It'll feature another Free Shirt Friday, a post-game concert featuring the Goo Goo Dolls on Saturday, and the Jonathan Lucroy record-breaking doubles bobblehead on Sunday. For more details about the upcoming homestand and for tickets, visit Brewers.com. That's going to do it this week for Brewers on Tap. Don't forget to tweet your questions each and every week to the Brewers using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. Thanks to our special guest, Brewers alumni Don August and Fox Sports Wisconsin's stat man Mike Faulkner. My name is Jeff Levering. Thanks for listening to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap.